All right. Can you just let me know when you're ready, buddy boy?
I'm ready when you are.
Cool.
How are we sounding here?
Talk a little bit.
Just listening to you sing a little. I guess One Republic is the band, right?
But One Republic.
Ryan Tedder, the front man of that band.
Damn, good knowledge.
Yeah, he's got a phenomenal voice, actually.
There's a station called Pop Rocks on Sirius XM that I recently discovered, and it's all the guilty pleasure songs that I otherwise used to ignore or be like, eh, it's lame, you know what I mean? But now, I mean, like, song after song, it's just hit after hit. Like, I think on the way, dropping the boys off this morning to school, it was, Lately I've been, dun, 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 dun. And I never listened to that. And then after that was Tom Petty, Learning to Fly.
Okay.
Then they play, like, Avril Lavigne, Complicated.
All the catchy stuff.
Then they'll play, like,
the bangers.
Gin Blossoms, like, Found Out About You.
I like it. I saw, Krista and I went and saw, I think it was at Mountain Winery, maybe.
Yeah.
Years ago, and One Republic came through.
You did?
A few other bands. I don't remember. We were invited for some friends, went and set up a little blanket, drank some wine. It was a nice time.
Yeah. And we opened the show with the piano stylings of one Eric.
Oh, yeah.
And here is Eric. How you been, Eric?
Oh, I've been good, man.
It's been a long... When was the last time I... not, let alone on the pod, when was the last time I saw you? Like, really?
Probably the last time we podded.
Really? And how long ago was that?
I think it's been...
Like February or something?
February.
March?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a long time.
It's been a long time. 4 or 5 months.
I like to...
I maybe swung by the house one time to drop some stuff off, but it's been a... We haven't hung out in a long time.
No, we have not. I regret that because I consider you a good friend and it's nice to see you, but you know, life takes hold and sometimes
life takes
hold. I do that with friends. The great Adam Montiel, we won't talk for like a month on end and then we'll just catch, we'll talk like every day.
Of the Where Wine Takes You podcast?
That's right, yeah. So
Adam Montiel.
So I open up with a little piano audio and for full disclosure to the listener, you're going to record some piano audio after we discuss this. So I don't know what you're playing and we don't have to go there, but you have been playing a lot of piano lately.
I have been. I think we've talked about this like very superficially on the show.
Yeah.
And you know, as a midlife dude, midlife dad, surfer, my son, I'm interested in him, you know, having music be a part of his life. And so he has signed up for piano lessons.
Nice.
And I'm firmly in the camp that I don't force my kids to do stuff that they don't want to do. But music, you're going to fucking do it.
Really?
So you got to do it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. I mean, the kids hate practicing. And most adults hate practicing. Practicing is a grind. But I want that to be part of my kids' experience, life experience.
Cool.
But I don't want to force him to do something that I wished I had done more of.
Right.
So I enrolled myself in piano lessons as well. So the Mountain Music School in Scotts Valley, and some very talented musical instructors there. So Harlan and I are taking lessons from Spencer Peterson, who I highly recommend.
All right.
Yeah, and I've been thunking away on the ivories for...
Thunking on the ivories.
Since October.
Tinkling the ivories.
6 or 7 months in.
Really?
Practicing piano every day.
Really?
I sure am.
Do you have a goal with it? Like, I like to play at a party.
Yeah, I want to play the gospel blues.
Yeah.
I want to be able to just sit down... Open all the doors in the springtime and the windows and just wherever the music takes me, be able to get lost in a progression for an hour. That's what I would like to do.
Have you done that?
No, I'm working on it. So
okay.
There's a number of things. You know, I did go in. So I've got some musical background. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I played saxophone for a number of years, did some singing. I can read music in the treble clef, but putting it together with both hands, treble and bass clef, there's a lot of new stuff for me. Have never taken piano lessons for any period of time. So it's a lot of new things for me. But when I sat down in the lesson, on my first lesson, you know, you don't want to build yourself up like you know what you're doing, because I don't.
Okay.
But I told the teacher, hey, you know, I've got some musical background. I've read some sheet music in the past. My goals for playing piano, I would like to play Christmas tunes at the holiday. Mm. I think that's a lovely thing. Have your house... filled with Christmas songs. I think that's a lot of fun. So I would like to do that. That's a goal of mine. And then I would like to be able to, whatever song my kids are into from whatever Disney movie they're excited about, I would like to be able to get the sheet music to that and play them a song that they would think is something familiar to them that they would be excited about.
So surfing, pianos, you really caught the bug.
I have. I mean, I would say, with full transparency, that it has in some ways replaced surfing in my life at this time.
Ain't that something?
But I'm not worried about it, because I know surfing will always be there and it will come back to me. Which is to say that I have not been in the water since we last talked.
Well, And I think it's been a while since you've been in the water when we last talked, too.
Yeah. I have surfed in this calendar year.
Have you?
But I have not surfed since February.
In this calendar year of our Lord?
Yep, yep.
You haven't surfed since February?
Yeah.
And here we are in July.
I got a vasectomy late February. So I was out of the water for 6 to 8 weeks for that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm shooting blanks over here, I think. I think at some point I'm supposed to like provide a sample to the doctor.
Right.
And they let me know.
Aren't you supposed to return?
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for listeners who don't know Eric, and you probably do if you listen, we have a small but loyal listenership of this pod here, but Eric's a good friend. Eric works at the hospital with my wife. I met Eric, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's got to be.
We've surfed many times. We've talked a lot of surf. Had you on multiple times to talk surfing. We got in a confrontation in the water at the Hook years ago in the surf.
Yeah. We did.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like a 1 or 2 foot day, and some douchebag on a foamy was just taking every wave. And then not only that, he was like really...
He's being overtly confrontational about it.
Yeah, but it was he was like smiling, like, everything's good. Like, what's going on? Yeah, I'm just having fun. Yeah. And his whole style was lame, too. I mean, actually, he was a good surfer, which pissed me off. But,
sure.
You know, upright posture. And he would, like, do, like, little dances on the board and do, like, twists and turns. And it wasn't until he dropped down on you, like, 3 or 4 times where I finally fucking paddled over, too. I was like, that's enough of this.
Yeah.
You're out here on your goddamn glider waiting your turn like a gentleman.
Yeah, getting into that's something, right.
Surfing well, too. You surf with integrity. Lately, that's been a theme of this pod about how to surf with integrity.
And I
think you do surf with integrity. And that cocksucker, I mean, that guy had no integrity when he dropped in on you.
None at all. Not a shred of integrity.
So I remember paddling over and yelling at him with you, and he yelled back. And then someone told us, you guys all just shut up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good times, man.
The Hook's the worst sometimes.
Surfers are the worst.
Surfers are the worst.
Surfers are the worst.
As the great Scott Bass would say. And if you want to listen to a real podcast, Surf Splendor, Spit, The Grit, and The Boardroom Show with Scott Bass, all, and David Lee Scales, of course, and Chad Smith, all fantastic podcasts. And basically, the impetus for recording this, and I steal plenty of material from those podcasts and repurpose it for this one.
Well, I will say that you said if you want to listen to a real surfing podcast, but my man, I think that you're like a legitimate threat for producing an actual surfing podcast at this point.
Well,
like,
we'll see. It's pretty half-assed. I did no show prep. I did print up a couple articles and a couple items that I wanted to talk to you about, but... So we know you have not been surfing. Do you think about surfing right now?
I do. I mean, it's one of those things, and I think we've discussed this in the past too, where I've said, I found that surfing is in my life where the more time that I don't surf, the easier it is for me to continue to not surf.
Yeah.
But all it takes is one day back in the water.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even take a day.
Yeah.
It takes one wave.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, if I went surfing today and I caught one wave, with 100% certainty, I would be like, man, I got to go do this tomorrow and every day.
That's what Michelle...
And it'll be back on like that.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
Michelle Journeau was saying, I had him on the pod again a month or two ago, and he was saying, you know, I have a lot of older surfers that I make boards for now. They want to surf, they used to be shortboarders, and I beef them up, and I give them lots of foam, and I tell them, like, don't stop, because once you stop, you start to lose that skill, and you start to lose the ability to get up to your feet quickly and efficiently. And so I recommend you keep, you know, you're young enough. I think I started surfing, not 35, I started surfing at about, I think, 31 or 32 years old, but you got to get out at least one more time during this calendar year, Eric.
Yeah, no, I will for sure. Probably this next week.
Nothing better than having a surf podcast guest on to have
that doesn't surf.
Nah, it's
no, you're
all
not
good.
Wrong. To tie those two points together, we originally started talking about the piano. Mm. So when you get an acoustic piano, it gets out of tune based on the humidity and the location and the temperature fluctuations. So I was looking for someone to tune my piano, and I found... I was recommended to me by my teacher. Oh, there's this guy. Here's his phone number. Turns out he's my next door neighbor.
Really?
Random.
Perfect.
Yeah. Lives right across the street from me.
What's it cost to get a piano tuned?
$170.
Damn. How often do you have to get it tuned?
Every 6 months. And he's actually an interesting business practice. So he's a little bit eccentric. I don't mean this to disparage him. Super nice Christian man.
Yes.
And he was saying, I think he's 70-some years old. And he was like, you know, because I asked him, have you ever thought about, like, when's retirement coming for you? And he was just like, there's just these pianos out there that don't sound right.
Right.
And it just drives me crazy. They got to get tuned.
Yeah.
And so when he finished tuning the piano, he said, now, all of my customers, I always book the next appointment before I leave today.
Right.
Because I need to make sure that you're taking care of your piano and you want to make sure you get the right. I was like, well, that's shrewd business practice.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, you know, I probably would forget to call you.
Have you considered learning to tune your own piano?
Oh, it's a whole thing.
Is it?
But yeah, I'm an eccentric dude, so I could see myself getting into that.
Yeah.
Get my hammers and my equipment. He's got like a machine that's, you know, a couple $1,000 that tells you what true pitch is on each one. Mm. I mean, if we're really diving in on this, and I'll abbreviate it because we're going to bore the listeners. But if it has been a very long time since you've tuned a piano, so the idea is there's strings, like guitar strings, right?
Right.
And you've got a wrench that you crank. The tighter they are, the sharper the note
will be. Is it an Allen wrench?
No, it's like a...
It's like a nut.
Yeah, it's like a wrench. Got it. I think so. Or it's like it's a pin. And
got
you put
it.
Like a little thing in the pin. There's holes machined through the pin.
Okay.
So the tighter the string is, the sharper the note is. And so he said, it's been so long since your piano was tuned. If we really tighten it up, the tension is going to loosen up and it's going to come back flat.
Mm.
So we're actually going to tighten it well beyond tune. We're going to tighten everything up to be on the sharp side across the board.
Yes.
Then I'll come back in a month and we'll retune because the strings will have been used to being really tight. But where I was going with this long story longer is that he was saying, well, I've got this man at my church. Because he saw my wall hanger, my Source Nick Palandrani wall hanging surfboard, which is in my living room next to my piano. He's like, there's a really nice Christian man in my church that shapes these nice surfboards. His name's Michelle. Michelle Juneau. He lives in Arizona. And I was like, I know Michelle. My friend Jeff gets surfboards from him.
So yeah, he is a cool dude.
That was a little nice little connection.
Does it inspire you once it's tuned? I know, like for, I'll put like a new set of strings. I have like a Taylor acoustic that I play around the house. And I don't touch it too much, probably once or twice a week. But every now and then I'll get a bug and I'll put new strings on it. And it kind of inspires me to play more because it just sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Are you inspired to play more once it's tuned?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was excited to sit down and some of the pieces I've been playing to hear them in proper tuning.
Yeah.
When you play an out-of-tune piano for so long, you kind of lose sense of...
Totally.
If it's in tune or not. I mean, if it's across the board flat, it sounds okay. But if you have variations between all the notes, that's what's
clunky.
Happening.
Yeah. So. How often do you replace the actual strings within a piano?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's like a guitar. They don't break like guitar unless you're like really hammering on your piano.
Right, because they're undercover.
Yeah,
you know, you're not banging on them, getting resin and skin and all that shit on your hands on the guitar.
Yeah,
you know, moisture, etc. That's interesting. And you know, we buried the lead. I really brought you on to talk about this Kevin Durant trade situation.
Oh,
no, but tell us real quick about what you've been doing for Reddit, covering NBA or G League or whatever.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
So this is my other hobby that's taking up so much of my time. Is that I have found my way with intentionality or by accident, I'm not sure which, into like a completely unpaid hobby. NBA basketball reporting situation.
Nice.
So for the last 6 years or so, a couple of my buddies, we moderate the Reddit page for the Golden State Warriors. No direct affiliation with the team, but people will go there to discuss trade rumors or share funny graphics of the internet or video clips that they've edited of hoops and all things related to hoops, specifically about the Warriors. And our like viewership has grown to like almost 500,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Yeah. So we've got a Twitter account. If you're on Twitter, you can follow at GSW Reddit.
Got it.
And in the last 6 months, I think we've hopped up to almost 80,000 followers and have gained recognition from the team and the beat writers and select players will discuss with us. So this has turned into us going in person to report on the G League in Santa Cruz. I just spent the last... three of the last 4 days in San Francisco. California Classic, the NBA beginning of the Summer League. Up at the Chase Center, we were able to get media credentials for that and did pre- and post-game interviews and talked with players, and it's been a lot of fun. So kind of doing some like scouting that goes to no one. I'm like not reporting back to any team.
Yeah.
But like I think we have the ear of select coaches and players, and it's been an interesting ride.
Well, what have you seen so far? And the California Classic is basically an invitational for a handful of NBA teams and their developmental league teams, or maybe some pros too. And it's a showcase, right?
Yeah, correct.
Who's going to make the team. Maybe there's a Warrior player that was drafted. He likely won't make the Warriors, but like, you know, the Bucks might be interested in him, or the Magic, or blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
What teams are participating in the Cali Classic? Is it just the California teams?
You would think so, but the Clippers were not there, but instead the Heat are there. So it was the Warriors, the Kings, the Lakers, And the Miami Heat were the fourth team in bubble.
All right.
So those four teams.
So they just play round robin? They play each other a bunch?
3 games. So each team got 3 games. They all played each other one time. The idea of summer camp, summer league, is you bring in a lot of players that are potentially promising candidates.
Right.
And you work through them and suss out their levels of talent, and you decide if they have a place playing professional basketball or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a combination of things. So you might have your draft picks like Moses Moody, who was a lottery pick last year, now
he's
an
playing.
NBA champion. He played. Quindary Weatherspoon, who's on a two-way contract with the Warriors last season for the later half of the year, he played as well. They obviously know what they have in these guys. They don't need to determine if they're talented or not, if they're going to play basketball professionally or not. But if you put 5 guys on the court that are all kind of question marks, there's no synergy there,
right.
And you're not going to see the best of those players. So they want the top-level guys that are young, that they want to get reps and minutes in, and Moody and Weatherspoon, to play alongside these question marks, because then you kind of see the best basketball from those other guys.
Right.
So some of those guys will end up maybe playing in Santa Cruz in the G League. Some of them, the Warriors will, like there's a young player, Lester Quiñones, that they drafted him this year, and he will go play in Santa Cruz. They've offered him a two-way contract.
Nice. So, what kind like two? What kind of money do G League players earn?
Good question.
I'm sure it covers a spectrum.
Yeah. So I mean, with just really rough figures, the minimum salary for a G League player is about $37,000.
Yeah.
And they put them up full time in a hotel, so their living expenses are cared for. But it's not a lot of money.
No.
G League players are making about half. Two-way G League players that bounce between the G League and the big clubs make about $500,000 a year.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Where it gets a little tricky is that there's a lot more money overseas.
Yeah.
So like you might make $1 million playing in Greece or in Europe or Spain or something like that if you're a really high level player. There's a guy Dustin Slava who's just now playing with Santa Cruz in their training camp this year. He's been playing with Paris Basketball for the last 4 years. Probably made quite a bit more money there than he did in the States.
Yeah. So. Which is a feat in itself, right? Like, playing overseas is no joke. You're playing professional.
Yeah.
You're doing what...
I mean, I think most of these guys, their dream is to make it to the NBA. That's the highest level.
Right.
But for some of them, it's just not a reality, and there's still good money to be made in basketball.
What did you think of the Warriors championship run?
Oh, it was amazing. It was a really great run. It all kind of came together.
Didn't exactly see it coming. Let me lower this just a little bit.
Sure.
I'm just a little concerned your beard's rubbing up against this from time to time.
Yeah, no, it was an exciting run. It was one of these situations where you knew that they had these players that were talented from the get-go.
Thank you. I think that's better.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Good.
They had the talent, but the big question mark was, can they all pull it together with their health at the same time?
Yeah. I mean,
you had Clay that didn't play pretty much through the beginning of the calendar year, and then I think they got like 1 minute together or 10 seconds together. Draymond Green slipped a disc in his back. He's out for a long time. I think Steph hurt his foot or his tailbone or something. He was out for a long time. The first time these guys played together was like the last game of the regular season.
Wow.
They somehow stringed it together with their health and won the whole damn thing.
It was a fun run. And I did not exactly see it coming, but then once you started to look around the landscape of the rest of the NBA, you realize like after like the first round, I don't know, was it Denver? I want to say they had the first, or was it Memphis? Yeah, Denver.
It was Denver first.
And then I thought, once I got, and then Memphis has always given the Warriors trouble.
Yeah.
But we've always persevered past Memphis. Even in the initial runs of the Warriors, like in the 14, 15, 16, like when they were really launched, you know, well, 15, I think they won their first championship in the modern era, or by modern era, and I mean,
this
like,
dynasty
since
era
1979
for them.
Or whatever. late 70s, whenever that was. Memphis was always a thorn in their side with, I think, Mike Conley and Zach Randolph and one of the Gasol brothers.
Mark Gasol.
Yeah, they were tough, but we always got past them. And then once we got past Ja Morant and the Grizz, it was like smooth sailing. I was kind of worried about Miami Heat beating us, but how was it too concerned? I don't know. Boston beat us game one, and I thought, oh, shoot, maybe they match up well against the Warriors across the board. But then, you know, they just kind of ran out of gas, it looked like.
Yeah, Steve Kerr, man, I think. There's a couple basketball podcasts if you're interested.
What do you listen to basketball podcasts?
A few. So I listen to The Athletic puts out a show called Plus Minus.
Yep.
Anthony Slater, Marcus Thompson, Tim Kawakami.
Yep, that's a good
three
one.
Of them round robin. That's maybe my favorite
one. Is that free?
One.
You don't have to subscribe?
It's free. Yep,
okay.
Free.
I like Plus Minus.
Yeah, Plus Minus is great. There's two guys, Andy Liu and Sam Espinari, that run the Light Years podcast. They're independent. Non-credentialed. Yep. It's more like discussion with live call-in where they talk about their opinions.
Oh, cool.
I think that's a fun one to listen to. Those are both good guys. I like Andrew Bogut. He's
got one.
He's pretty conservative in his opinions, politically, and he's loudly outspoken about that.
Yeah.
But he has really good basketball insight. He and his friend Mike Proprio, I believe. Okay. He was Kobe Bryant's personal trainer.
Cool.
The two of them record and talk about the current landscape of the NBA. That one's an interesting listen. That can be a little bit long-winded.
Yeah.
Those are the main ones that I'm listening to.
Yeah, he's an Aussie. He doesn't hold back.
Yeah. No, not at all. And I appreciate Bogut's perspective.
Yeah.
So those are the shows I'm listening to. Most recently, though, Draymond Green is putting out his own podcast.
Yeah.
And Andre Iguodala, that one I really enjoy. He and Evan Turner have a show called Point Forward.
All right.
They connected in Philly when they were there.
Yeah.
And it's really insightful. And he actually went on to talk about the finals run. And he was saying that after when they went down 2-1.
Yeah.
He and Evan Turner were at like a steakhouse in Boston.
Yeah.
And Evan asked him like, hey, how's the series going to go? He like nonchalantly looked, he's like, oh, we're going to win in six.
Yeah.
And Evan's like, you just went down 2-1. Like, you lost home court advantage. What do you mean you're going to win in six? He's like, oh, Steve Kerr's got it figured out. He's
really?
Like, he's like, maybe they'll catch fire and just go really hot from three and steal one more game. He's like, but this series is a wrap. We're going to win in six.
What did Steve Kerr figure out?
Just the rotations. I think that they had a hard time going left, Boston did. Mm. And the way that they were selling out on Steph Curry playing like drop screens, he was just finding himself wide open for three. And when they didn't fully commit to that, they were making the right passes inside and Wiggins was just eating them up.
Mm.
And I think that they just had answers for everything that Boston had thrown at them.
Yeah.
The longer the series went on, it was really obvious Boston was losing their legs. They were just very fatigued. They were running on like a 7-man rotation and their 8th man that they were trying to use was relatively unplayable and they just weren't going to be able to go the distance.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was his opinion and his take held up.
And have you been featured on other podcasts as well now?
I've done a couple guest appearances. There's one called the All Nat podcast. She talks about Warriors and their current matchups. My friend Kevin and I went on that show.
Cool.
I've been on Light Years one time with Sam and Andy. And I just got asked to do... I'm going to be on Warriors Talk. They're going to do like a round robin about the end of the season. They're contacting some beat writers and they asked me if I'd answer some questions and they're going to cut a bunch of people's opinions about the show.
This is outstanding.
So yeah, I'm kind of carving up. There's no money in it for me. I haven't monetized. I've been reached out to by a number of organizations that want to promote their sports book or whatever. Yeah. And there's just nothing that's felt right to me. So
you've been reached out by organizations that want you to promote their stuff on Reddit?
Yeah. Or on Twitter specifically.
Advertisers.
Yep. And it's interesting. Like I've had someone, you know, it's a fine line because we've really built up the number of readers that are looking at what we're doing, which is kind of interesting. There's a lot of online engagement that takes place on our platform. And so obviously people want to advertise and have had people say, hey, we would like to purchase some retweets. All you have to do is retweet whatever we do, and we'll give you $200 a week if you retweet 20 things.
Mm.
And it's like, it would be very low effort, but I also feel like it would kind of flood the readership with advertising. And I don't really want to do that at this point.
So. Right.
And I also, another reason that I've turned it down is that I don't have a really good sense of what market value is for this type of thing.
Mm.
Like, what type of engagement do you have? It's really interesting. If you look on Twitter, they will show you the levels of engagement that each individual action that you make yields you as far as, you know, there's impressions, which are like who actually clicked and interacted with something that you have, who reposted it, or who just had, who had your image of your tweet on their screen as they scrolled by. How many times did that happen?
All those
and
metrics.
Some of these things, like these little video clips, will catch a couple million sets of eyeballs, which is bizarre to me. And it's also the things that you put out there, it can be frustrating at times. Like I'll send you this picture. I spent like a couple hours illustrating a cartoon in Photoshop of James Wiseman looking like Jimbo from The Simpsons, like one of the bullies. The
okay.
one with like the beanie and the long hair.
Yeah.
I like made his skin brown to match Wiseman's. I gave him like the big goofy sideshow bob hair like Wiseman has. I made it, put him in a Warriors jersey. It took me like 2 or 3 hours to illustrate.
Why'd you do this?
Because I thought it was funny. Like, it just made me laugh. I was like, oh, his nickname's Jimbo. His nickname is Jimbo. This is just funny thing.
Oh, Wiseman's nickname's Jimbo?
Well, I don't know. What Jimothy, Big Jim, Big Wise, James Wiseman, whatever. So it made me laugh. And so I just got caught up one day after the kids fell asleep, and I was... you know, shading the borders, and I just couldn't stop. And I was like, oh, it could look like this, and it could have this color, whatever. And I built it, and I published it, and it got like 10 retweets.
Yeah.
Which is very minimal. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next day, the Warriors were playing, and Stephen Curry, like, made 2 3-pointers in a row. And I sent out a tweet that literally just said, Stephen Curry. That was it. In real time.
That's what you
because,
wrote.
Yeah, I just wrote Stephen Curry, and I tweeted it. Got retweeted like 2,000 times.
Wow.
And I was like, this is bullshit. Like, this bird app is bullshit. Like,
yeah.
Why do certain things take off when other things don't? Like, why am I even trying to make content that's original?
And what are you trying to do? I mean, this is just kind of a community that you're engaging with.
Yeah, just having fun.
It's rewarding for you.
I think it's really healthy to have hobbies in your life.
Yeah.
That you enjoy, and they don't need to return money to you.
No.
I mean, it would be interesting if it did, I suppose. I'm not like averse to that.
Sure.
But I really enjoy that it's not a job for me, where some of, as you know, the more I've spent with the organization, with the beat writers, it's a grind for these guys. And like, there's pressure from their syndicated organizations to produce content on a time frame that they might not want to, and they might not feel like they're getting their best content out there.
Right.
Because they have to publish it every... You see these guys, like, at halftime, they're scrambling to start writing the articles that they've... They've already chosen the narrative before the game is finished.
Yeah.
They're sitting in the post-game conference room waiting for players to finish in the locker room or whatever, and they're all quietly typing up their articles so they can leave once the interview... Like, they've got a space where they're going to put in the quote to the answer of whatever question they've predetermined they're going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as that question is asked, they're listening back to make sure they get the quote right. They're publishing the article, and they're trying to go home at 11 at night.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I love that I don't have to do that.
Right, right.
That I don't have to worry about that. If I don't feel like watching a game, I don't watch a game. If I don't want to tweet, I don't tweet.
I worked for a small weekly paper in the Valley called the Clovis Independent and covered prep sports and some pro stuff. Like, by pro, I mean like when the Clovis Rodeo came to town. Etc. And a little bit of college stuff too. And writing on a deadline is a different ball game.
Yeah,
so those guys are on a deadline, but there's no, you don't, now it's just a race to get it online.
Sure.
Before, I think it was like 1:30 a.m. was like the deadline to get in, to go to freaking print, you know, for the Fresno Bee to print it all up and to distribute, you know, throughout the land, which is kind of a trip. But writing on deadline, you have to kind of build some skeleton of a story.
Sure.
You know, as the game progresses, some narrative. But imagine, I don't know, like, and I swear we're going to talk about surf before long, but imagine, like, remember, like, remember the Spurs were up? What finals was it against the Heat where they were up by, like 13 or something with a minute to play or something in the finals? I think it was a game 7, too, and then Ray Allen hit that memorable, it was the Dwayne Wade, you know, LeBron, Ray Allen, and Chris Bosh, Udonis Haslem, Miami Heat, and... Remember, like, Ray Allen hit that three after, like, half the stadium had already left, thinking it was over with? And then the Heat ended up winning the championship, which was probably so sweet for them. But imagine just the delete, like, having to rewrite that whole piece over again.
I mean, there's something about if you don't get it out on time, it's not even worth publishing.
Mm.
Because, like, no one wants to read about the game that happened, like, noon the next day. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got to be there when you wake up and you're drinking your coffee. Or otherwise, there's already another game has been played.
Or that
the
night.
The new cycle has turned.
There's post-game. I mean, Draymond does his pod, like...
Two in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Draymond's pod is cool, and I want to check out Andre Iguodala's pod, too. I think that they call it alternative media. But, like, you know... The new media, thank you. Cutting out the middleman's pretty a rad concept, and it's... It's interesting to see just in our lifetime how media has taken shape. I know in surf, you know, it's gone from the hard copy publication, Surfer, Surfing Magazine, which really drove, advertisers really drove, try not to use the word narrative because it's just so overused now, but, you know, drove the culture. And now that's not the case. Now you got to be posting on Instagram all the time and having these little quick hit bite-sized morsels. And
for
I find my attention span waning, and I'm sure obviously the surf market, you know, attention span has waned, and probably for selling surfboards too, like Instagram, how good is your website? You know, FireWire does a kick-ass job with their website, like determining what volume they recommend for you, and constantly, and Lost has a good website, Channel Islands has a good one too. It's just interesting to see how media progresses and evolves, you know?
You got to stop people from getting bored. Mm. You need people to get engaged and get those little dopamine hits.
Mm-hmm.
You want them daydreaming and... You know, it's they do a good job at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that the current state of social media really lends itself to that.
Well, I'm still going to talk basketball, so sorry, listener, but I swear to God, we're going to get to surf before long. You can fast forward if you'd like, but Kevin Durant, what's your take on that? What's going to happen there? Kevin Durant left the Warriors 3 years ago. He joined forces with the Warriors. He left the Brooklyn Nets. He only played a total of, what, 45 games with Kyrie Irving or something like that? And now we've learned that he's requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets.
There's so much there, man. And I mean, I could talk about this all day.
Go.
And I won't. But
that's all right.
The question is, I'm not even clear on why Kevin Durant wants to leave Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So initially,
right,
it's his feelings in Brooklyn, he is handling it very differently than he did when he had negative feelings in Golden State. It came out in the media through reporter Ethan Strauss. Is he going to Brooklyn? Is he going to the Knicks? There's a lot of talk about Porzingis leaving the Knicks. Is he going there? And he took big offense to it. And the writing was on the wall. Kevin Durant didn't sign an extension, and he knew he was going to leave. And the fans were sniffing it out because he's big time, and everyone wants to know, and the reporters were as well. And he was so angry because he didn't want to upset the locker room while they were trying to push for a championship.
Sure.
And so he got aggressive about, why? I just want to talk about basketball. You're all talking about my contract. Why? It's like, well, yeah, because everyone wants to know what you're doing. Like, whether we ask you about it or not, this is on everyone's mind.
Right.
And he just handled it immaturely, in my opinion. But all the pressure in the world on this guy's shoulders from the media. Every move that he's made has been scrutinized. And he's made some questionable decisions professionally. This time around, very different. Like, obviously, there was big drama in Brooklyn. James Harden wanting out, pushed his way to Philly. Durant never spoke on it, never said a negative thing. There was this awkward moment where, like, Harden pushed himself for a trade right before the All-Star draft.
Okay.
And LeBron and KD are live with the Inside the NBA crew, Shaq, okay, Ernie. They're drafting who's going to be on their team.
Did LeBron and KD do the draft?
They did it live on video.
KD was part,
like,
of it,
a few hours after Harden pushed himself out, who was an All-Star and was up to be drafted and was the very last pick. And they were all laughing as Andrew Wiggins or other players that were question marks were getting drafted ahead of James Harden. And it was this standoff where LeBron was like, I'm not going to pick him because I want to make KD do it. He just let him fall. And LeBron, there was some gamesmanship to it. LeBron's like, I know KD's not going to pick him, so why would I waste a pick on this guy I know will be there for me?
Right.
And they're all cracking up about it. And Durant's just like, well, I think I could really use some more size on my team. And
Just
completely damn. You got to go back and watch this.
So Kevin Durant was going out of his way not to pick Harden?
For sure.
How interesting.
I mean, the guy just pushed his way off his team and, like, effed their whole culture.
Yeah.
Like, it was a dirty move, for sure.
Yeah, Durant's interesting. He's like, he's not a bad guy. He doesn't get in trouble. He seems like a good, all in all, like a good teammate. You know, he's with the Warriors. He seems really, I think his number one, he doesn't, like I said, like, there's athletes that get DUIs or they beat up their girlfriends or they, who knows? Like, it happens all the time. Just, it doesn't, you don't have to throw, in the NBA, actually, the dudes seem to be better, by and large, just anecdotally, more role models or model citizens, I think, compared to, say, the NFL, where you got, I don't know, maybe by virtue of CTE or head trauma or whatever. There's just a lot of, like, brutes, testosterone-laced guys who party hard, who get in some shit, get in car accidents, you know, just get in a bunch of bad trouble. KD doesn't do any of that. So he seems like a pretty nice guy. I think he's just, like, self-conscious to a fault. He doesn't seem comfortable in his own skin.
It's a combination. I think that that was a lot. I think that that's an accurate statement, and I think that it was strongly in that direction when he decided to come to Golden State. I think he was really caught off guard by the amount of criticism that he has ongoingly received.
Yeah.
And I think he's evolved through that and decided that he doesn't give a shit what other people think about him. Or is,
you think so?
Outwardly saying, like, I don't care.
Totally cares.
I think it bothers him to some degree. I think that he's leaning into being the villain a little more than he was.
He should.
But I do think that he's a little bit sensitive. So why does KD want out of Brooklyn? Is it because Kyrie Irving was unvaccinated and wasted a year of his career and wouldn't play and they didn't pull it together and Harden left? Maybe. But I've also heard that there is rumor of Kyrie Irving wanted an extension in Brooklyn. And Joe Tsai, the owner, said no. Like, I'm not going to extend you to some long max deal. Like, presumably because you didn't even show up to play. And KD has said, hey, If you're not going to extend my guy and lock the two of us in, I want out of here.
Right.
So give my guy an extension or I'm leaving.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know if KD is upset with the situation of Kyrie being his teammate or if he's standing by his good friend and trying to say, hey, you need to pay this guy or we're both leaving.
Right.
I don't know which it is. I will say that the idea of Kevin Durant coming back to the Warriors, I think, is unlikely. But there is more to it than people think.
Hell yeah, you'd be stupid not to consider that.
Well, Mark Spears, ESPN reporter, came out and said, hey, there's been phone calls about this.
Yeah.
So I actually reached out to Mark Spears and said, does this have legs? Or are you just like blowing smoke and creating clicks? He kind of waffled and he was like, it's Kevin Durant. Of course there's phone calls. Half the team is called. I was like, yeah, that's kind of a bullshit report though. Like, you can't say the Golden State Warriors are interested if all 30 teams have picked up the phone just to do due diligence.
Right.
And I've gotten the sense from some murmurings that, like, no, this is, like, actually a thing that could happen.
Joey Lightyears, man. Joe Lacob, the owner of the Warriors. Why wouldn't he?
So that's where it gets tricky, because Lacob loves Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
But he loves Jonathan Kuminga.
Ah.
So, and James Wiseman. Mm. He's like irrationally committed to those two guys. He's so convinced, and there's some hubris there. He's so convinced that he has found the next thing. Mm. And I think the real question would be, why would you upset the apple cart?
Right.
Like, they successfully have threaded the needle of bringing in this new core that can become champions on their own once Steph and Clay and Draymond hand the torch over. And those two generations together just won a championship.
Right.
And that core is still there.
Right.
So, like, they should arguably be the favorites to win again. Mm. So why would you throw away that young core so that you can win again next year with Kevin Durant when you can probably have a good shot to win again next year without Kevin Durant?
Right.
That's the argument that I would make. But going back-to-back and defending a title is very difficult.
Yeah.
And if I'm being honest, I think if Durant comes back next year, I think that they are heavily the favorites to win.
That'd be so sweet.
And I'm not going to complain if it happens.
I'm in on Kevin Durant. I never, you know, I had bad feelings about him for leaving the Warriors, but never, like, you know, personal animus toward him.
Kevin, I know you're listening.
Kevin, listen.
Come home. Come on home.
Come home back. Yeah. Isn't he from the D.C. area originally?
Yeah, he's from D.C., I think.
DMV?
We'll put it on the, you know, we'll build the statue. We'll retire the jersey. Mm. Come home, man.
All right, we're 37 minutes into this. We should talk surfing.
If we must.
We must. Shabby, my man Shabby. I went to, I went down to Baja a couple weekends ago.
No, tell me about it. Yeah.
Well, I told the listeners about it pretty good. We recorded live from it. Had a friend named Bucky down there, my buddy Jason. surfed at a spot that I guess should go unnamed. And anyways, relatively popular spot on the East Cape. And I surfed like shit, I did. The waves were really fun.
What board did you bring?
I brought my 7-0 Speed Seed by Juno.
Oh.
But then, it wasn't, how could I say this? It was like, I don't feel like I was good enough on it to like competently get down the line, to pick my angle, to get going. It was a board that would have kicked ass for a better surfer there. But I ended up getting my hands on a Lost Crowd Killer, which was also at the house in which we were staying. It was like 6'9". It was like 42 liters.
Okay.
Lost Crowd Killer. Ugly. Swallowtail, like double wing. It just looked weird. Like the Lost logo's way too high on the nose and the Mayhem. I hate that Mayhem. Mayhem. That Mayhem logo's way low. And just ugly board. The second I paddled on it, it felt better. So I was a little more twitchy. It just felt like you can get like in the pocket faster. You know, if you're kind of like, for me, I'm more a back foot surfer, so I get bogged down and the wave starts to outrace me. It was just a little easier to like kind of skip your way into the wave a little more. All in all, I had a great time. I haven't, you know, I don't really drink anymore. I kind of drop booze early December. Not indefinitely. I'll have a glass of wine with my wife or on a special occasion, but didn't party at all, like all 3 days that we were there, which was pretty cool. It was kind of fun. We're pretty clear headed and the rest of the crew didn't really either. I guess that's a, you know, midlife surf trip, right?
Sure.
A couple of guys in their 40s. But so I had a good time. But Shabby wrote me. Shabby and I have tried to connect to surf a couple times. He's a Santa Cruz guy. Or actually, he's a Bay Area guy, but I think he comes down to Santa Cruz. But he just wrote, I just wanted to read his email just for a little feedback. Actually, this is only the second time I'm reading it. In fact, I printed some stuff up. And on the spot, I'm going to have to highlight some items to talk about.
Sure.
I've done horrible show prep for today, but what else is new? Hi, Jeff. I was listening to your latest podcast the other night. It was a great one. I got back from Cabo San Lucas on Tuesday night, so it was a timely one. My son and I got to surf Playa El Tule, Nine Palms, twice, and Shipwrecks while we were there. Loved the spot, nature, and the vibe. Nine Palms was huge the first time we were there. It was about 5 to 8 feet. with several set waves well overhead. This was the swell that was kicked up by Tropical Storm Celia. I was hesitant to go out on my first day when I saw the forecast, but I remembered you described Baja waves as big, yet not too steep, with big faces and pretty forgiving. And I'm so stoked we decided to go out. And it's true, I found that wave to be, you know, I guess it depends on what spot you're going to and the swell direction, et cetera, et cetera. But compared to like Nicaragua, that wave, like in Nica, like the wave like slabs up really quick, gets hollow and just gadooshes. So you got to really get to your feet and like skip down the line to get high in the line to get going and be specifically on the shoulder. So you just don't get pitched, which I got pitched over and over last year when I went to the Nica. Here, it's more like the hook, probably, or pleasure point, where it's a little more slopey.
Slow entry.
The lane, you know what I mean? Where it's just forgiving, kind of, if you can get going. So I'm glad he went out. We went to this awesome surf company, Cabo Surf Turos, Cabo Surf Tours. He gives me the website. They're so much fun. We explored different breaks, studied the swell, got advice on point breaks in Baja, learned about their life stories and experience in the ocean with a gentleman named Martin and Emiliano. You know, we didn't bring boards, but we rented I like this kind of talk. I rented some boards built by a local shaper, Olea. Olea, my buddy Jason has a board, a fun board, an 8-0 Olea board. Okay. And it's cool. It's glassed in like Mexican colors too. It's the Christmas board, right?
It's like
white, red, and green. I haven't really surfed it. It's thick. It looks kind of fun. My son got a 6-0, and I toggled between a 6-10 and a 7-2 fish the 3 days we went out. Anyway, he had an awesome time. I hooked him up with a friend of the show, Squid, who lives down there. He liked my story. There was a gal that looked at my buddy Bucky, who's an absolute ripper, and she said, Mexicanas primeras, like told him, like, Mexicans first, and it kind of bummed him out a little bit, and then ultimately he got over it. But he said he liked that story. I listened and chatted with a few locals in the lineup. There was a Grom who was killing it at shipwrecks, and he took off on a huge bomb and disappeared from sight. Then I heard him shout, Aguas! Look out, be careful, apparently is what that means. And he flew down the line and threw spray flowing up and down the wave. Shabby, I love your feedback, dude. Here's a picture of Shabby. Look at this. That looks like 9 palms to me.
Oh, that's killer,
holy
man.
Shit.
Overhead wave.
Dude.
That's a good one.
Shabby, did that close out? I want you to write me. Is that just a good looking picture? Did that run away from you and you happen to get that shot?
There's a line on that.
Or did you just crank it and go straight up that face from that picture?
I imagine him going down the line and yelling, Aguas.
Aguas. Yeah, Shabby's from Spain, I believe.
Cool.
And I called him Zabi for a while, but I learned it's Shabby.
Shabby, that's a great email.
That is a good email. And I appreciate that. And Shabby sent me a beautiful picture of him surfing some tropical waters with a white rash guard and board shorts and what looks to be his 6'10 or 7'2 Olea hybrid fish.
You should put that photo on your Instagram.
God damn, if I really fucking gave a fuck about Instagram, I would do it, but I'm just so lazy and so busy.
That's right.
It's hard enough just doing this right now. What can I say? You know, I like that crowd killer loss. It's an ugly board, but I may get my hands on one and get after it in Santa Cruz. I've been surfing up in Waddell. I got this MR twin fin, California twin. It's 6'2". Mm-hmm. It's a lost MR California twin fin. They call it Cali twin, it's called. And it's like a wide fish. It's like 2¾ thick, but it's 22 wide. It's 6'2". Probably oversized, but a kook like me. Just been working on like lunging toward the lip. Like when I get up, like getting really heavy on my front foot, hands up, you know, looking at the lip, getting going. And actually I was at the hook the other day, paddled out at sunrise and the tide was super duper low. Kind of some bro-y dude, like this 20-year-old hotshot was like, are you going out? And I was like, yeah. He goes like, any sets come through? I go, nah, it kind of looks weak. And you know, I don't know, whatever. He goes, yeah, I'll go out too. And then sure as shit, he just started getting the set waves and ripping on it.
Of course.
And I kind of kooked it the first couple times, but like I was like an hour into my session, I was talking to him. He was telling me like when he thinks it's good tide-wise and the direction. And we were just kind of, you know, I like just make like a friend for that half hour or whatever. Sure. And then one was coming, he goes, this is all you. And like, I didn't have, usually in my head, I'd have that ticker tape, like, don't fuck up, don't fuck up, don't fuck up. But the second I saw it coming, I was like, yeah, this is all me.
Yeah.
I stroked into it. I actually pulled it up on the camera. I'll show it to you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I kind of took like a half drop, you know, and then kind of just whipped it real quick. And I have this twin plus one setup. They're like the lost twin fins with a little trailer. And it went like, whoop, and like took me right up to the top.
Nice.
Then I took my re-entry. And then it kind of started closing out and almost like I was trying to get barreled. You know, if I was better, I would have like gotten up and gotten a head cover, but I kind of went down to the bottom of the wave and it was sliding and there's face in front of it and went right around and right up to the top again.
Nice, man.
And then went down and then it closed out and I took it straight in. I turned, I kind of gave my buddy a salute and I said, adios, you know, and that was a nice way to end it. So
that sounds like a lot of fun.
It was fun. So, and I'm such a kook, dude. I had to look it up on Surfline and I screenshot it. And then I showed it to my buddy Alex Jacobarocco, and I also sent it to Bucky too. So douchey. But I'll show it to you after this pod. But so anyway, I've been going up to the beaches more often than not. I was still kind of into the shortboard thing. I want to just get better at it.
Yeah.
I like how like you can manage the board a little bit easier.
Sure.
Also, like I don't know what it is. I just feel like, well, you don't know how many years you have left on your life. I could die right now after this pod. That'd be cool if I died during the pod, doing what he loved.
Who?
That'd be something else. Would you publish it for me?
Sure.
All right.
That'd be interesting content. I mean, what direction is it? Do you want me to do CPR?
Like,
do you
I don't know.
Or do you want me to just like, let you be like...
No, no, no. We try to revive me. Then my wife runs in and it's
Jeff
a whole
thing.
Jeff
has died in this moment.
Keep the audio rolling. Yeah. It'd make for good pod. And then finally an advertiser would want to come on.
Oh, for sure. That would get millions of
listens. Yeah, just email it to Adam. He would know what to do from there.
Yeah, for sure.
But on another... My point was, you never know when you're gone from this earth. You never know when your last wave is. And... On that note, I should just be longboarding and just trying to get as many fucking waves as possible.
I think you should do whatever you have the most fun doing.
Yeah, and I have fun doing both. But I do have this notion, like, I'm going to longboard it when I'm 50. Like, while I still, like, have a bit agility.
Me
and
too.
I do. Like, I could do, like, my short squats and, you know, like, what are they called? I don't know, like, my... I don't even know what I'm... I say short squats, but you know, like catcher's position, like I can pop up, I can move, I can stretch really good. I'm relatively flexible for a 6'2 gangly dude. So I'm like, well, I still have my a semblance of athleticism and I still want to just kind of like still work on shortboarding.
Sure.
It's the ego thing. But like I sent that thing over to my buddy who kind of analyzed it. He's like, yeah, your shoulders got to be back. You're still hunched. And that's what I was in like, and Mexico, man, these fucking pictures of me just look so fucking ugly. Like, I'm talking poo stance, hunched over.
Quasimodo coming down the line.
And they're both painful to look at, but also really helpful, too.
Sure.
So I'm trying to be more, like, front forward facing and just to stand up straight with my shoulders back. You do that. You have a good posture when you surf. Oop. I've seen pictures of me when I'm hunched. This was a little hybrid of both. I was, like, three-quarter hunched and kind of a respectable stance, but still the arms were kind of wild. Anyway, and I'm an adult learner.
You know?
And I still am. And I heard I think it was on the Grit podcast with the great David Lee Scales and Chad Smith, that like a year progression for like an 11 or a 12 year old is like 10 year progression for an adult learner. And I believe that.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
There's an article. So I don't subscribe to stabmag.com, but it's, what time do you got to get out of here? Are you okay?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Let me know. Okay, good. But I did like the 7-day free trial and like bought a month of it.
Sure.
And then I'm just going to let it expire because what the fuck. But while I was there, I decided to poach some content for the pod. And I read this article by Jed Smith of Ain't That Swell fame.
Okay.
That's a really popular podcast, I think recorded out of Australia. And it kind of hurt my feelings, but it had some truth to it. And I was just curious. It was a lot of hot takes on, and it's titled, it was written May 8th on Stab Mag. The words were by Jed Smith. And I should have highlighted some stuff, but it's brutal truth about surfing in the era of adult learners. The first topic is, you might never surf better than a 12-year-old. Jed writes, due to the complex interplay between the brain and body, it is difficult, bordering on impossible, to develop any level of surfing proficiency without having laid some kind of foundation during childhood and adolescence. In other words, if you've taken up surfing as an adult, it's almost certain you will fail to reach even an intermediate level, defined here as the ability to thread an overhead barrel at least once out of every four attempts and link together multiple maneuvers in a fairly fluid way. I won't, if that's the definition of intermediate, then I probably won't reach that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe there's some truth to that, but I don't think that it's like written in stone. There are people that break that mold.
Jay, right?
Exactly. Jay's a good example. Jay didn't start surfing until he was probably 26, 27 years old.
I wonder
old.
If that's still like...
And he's like really talented at surfing.
Jay, and I want to... Actually, I texted him a while back talking to... I want to have him on the pod.
Yeah.
He's a really talented... What's his name?
Jay Raymond Bundalian.
Yes. And what's his Instagram?
Good question.
At live like J69.
It might be, yeah, right. It might be Jay Boondallion.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, he rips.
He's a really stylish longboarder.
But 27 is different than 32, maybe, to start?
I don't know. I mean, if Jed's argument is that like there's some like synapses that are formed in early
that's
childhood,
true.
Like Jay would have been well past that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I think about guitar, you know, I started playing guitar at like 12. If you put a guitar in my hand, it comes very natural to hit
my
chords.
Sure.
And I'm glad I learned that then. And just the rhythm and the pacing and when to mute it and when not, like, I just have that in me now because I learned that as a kid. Throwing a baseball is a great example.
Sure.
Play a lot of Little League and you see guys who are athletic as fuck, but they don't
throw cannot throw it in the
they don't throw it in that same fluid way.
But how many of those guys in adulthood are saying, I really want to commit to learning how to throw a baseball?
They're not.
Better. But if they did, they could learn it.
Maybe. I don't think
they could. I would say my son and I, we both started piano lessons. I won't tell him this because it would hurt his feelings. And I'm kicking this kid's ass at playing the piano.
All right.
Which is, it's kind of a joke, but at the same time, it's not. I think that where kids have an advantage is that they don't have the weight of other life responsibilities that they have to deal with. When you're a kid and you're surfing, that's all you have to worry about. That's all you think about.
Right.
Kids are daydreaming about surfing. They're doodling about surfing.
They're in school, and that's what his point,
thinking about surfing.
And Jed writes, as an adult, your attempts to improve will prove fruitless due to a few factors. As a rule of thumb, to maintain your current level, you must surf once a day. To improve the level, you must surf twice a day, swell permitting less than once, and you will struggle to maintain your skills and will gradually decline. And he basically says the responsibilities of adulthood just don't allow you the same way the freedoms that a kid does. You know,
yeah.
Skating too, like I can skate, I could just hop on a board, do an ollie. You know, like I don't know if I could learn an ollie now as an adult. Swimming's another great example. You learn to swim when you're 3, 2, 3, 4. You don't think about swimming. It's just natural. And then adults who never learn how to swim, sadly, that's a must be a really big thing to try to overcome. So that one.
Kids are used to being bad at stuff. When you're a kid, you don't know how to do anything. And every single thing that you're trying to do, you're learning how to do, you are going to be bad at it because you've never tried it before. And that is your normal. You're used to being a failure and improving through it. Whereas in adulthood, you get really complacent and you find these areas in which you have some success. And people don't like to feel like they're failing at things. So it is very easy to stay in the comfortable area and not go challenge yourself to be bad at new stuff like surfing. And I think that's a huge barrier. Or even learning a musical instrument. Where kids, that's kind of their wheelhouse. That's how I feel about it.
He finishes this topic on the beginner, as with most adults, as with almost all sports, is subject to a host of limitations, and your presence in most lineups is generally tolerated but not enjoyed by other surfers.
That's fair.
It's fair. It hurts, but it's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says, stay out of people's way, try not to hurt anyone, and you'll always get some measure of respect. Okay. Here's one I love. Just because it was an accident doesn't make it okay. If your negligence injures someone or puts them at risk, don't hide behind it as being an accident. In surfing, there are very few accidents. Everyone who surfed a while knows this. Almost all mishaps boil down to a decision you made or chose not to make. The less experienced you are, the more prone you are to make terrible mistakes which have the potential to cause serious injury. Your thoughts?
I think that that's true.
Yeah.
And I think that people get defensive when someone confronts them argumentatively. And I think that instead of saying, hey, it was an accident, I think that you can just say, hey, I'm sorry. But even then, oftentimes saying sorry doesn't quell the anger of the offended.
I thought about my offense last month where I dropped in on someone on purpose. I don't know why the fuck I did it because my ego took hold of me. I saw a guy come down the, it was like a 1 foot day at our favorite surf spot where all the confrontations take place. Mm-hmm. Except for you, you can get into them at any surf spot.
Right.
But he had a little, he got into it, and I was like, fuck you, I've been waiting a half hour, you know, and I just dropped in, and then, I kicked out, but I didn't kick out in a good way, my board's, my nose was still, I kind of pulled the board back off the wave, and he, ducked it, kept going, and then I heard him MFing me, paddling back, MFing me to a group of people, and I turned and waved at him, come on, took my hood off, you know, and just started paddling up to him, and I said, I'm not going to fight you, dude. He's like, I'm not talking about fighting. You fucking can't even kick out of a wave, you know, 1 foot wave and this and that. And you lose your board. That's what he said. I go, I didn't lose my board. But I should have just been like, you're right. I dropped in on you. My bad. You're right. I dropped in on you. My bad. You're right. I dropped in on you.
Nah.
My bad. But instead, I did some shit that was like, I didn't lose my board. And I have lost my board, but I didn't lose my board. But I did kick out poorly. And, my bad, over and over. But then I don't know, I kind of engaged with them a little too long, and there was a sense of defensiveness, and now as I analyze it, I was just pissed off at how aggro he was, and he's like, you're not some loked out dude. I'm like, okay, I want to see you out here when it's good. Okay. And it's talk about projection, right? I'm not some loked out dude from the guy who's being the loked out dude.
Yeah.
But I appreciated what it said, and my cardinal sin was dropping in on him, you know, and the ego kind of got in the way a little bit, and I'm almost glad it happened because I look three times now. And even if I'm in the right, I'm like, I'm still not gonna drop in because I'm not competent enough that I'm sure I'm gonna kick out of this wave cleanly if he's buzzing down the line.
You had said you had waited for half an hour. Had he been grabbing every 1 foot wave that was coming through?
I waited a half hour. He just came down, paddled out.
Okay.
And then took. So I was in the right morally, I guess, etiquettely, but I wasn't in the right by virtue of my inability to kick out cleanly. Yeah. And it is a game of merit, you know, and I did not have the skill set to drop in on them. When you drop in on someone, you're saying, I'm better than you, basically, or I'm going to handle this and you're going to deal with it. And I just didn't handle myself. So as an adult learner, again, this hurts. I didn't say it was just an accident though, but there is a defensiveness when you violate the rules of surf, and the ego is just, sometimes the ego just takes hold and runs off.
I mean, that's so common for all people, right? Like, we don't only get offended when we're morally in the right or have the high ground.
Right.
People get defensive and upset when they're challenged and they're clearly in the wrong every day. That's a really common response to see.
In or out of the water.
Yeah, that happens in surfing, absolutely.
And in marriage.
Yeah, right. Well, I can't speak on that because I've never been wrong.
Oh, right.
I'll let you know if that ever happens.
Don't hide behind the law. I don't know. If the guy punched me in the face, I would not call the cops. Where do you stand on that?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. It would really depend on what the situation was. Like what led up to that moment? How did I respond? Like, was I aggressive as well? If I've matched some aggression and kind of pushed the envelope and led it towards a fight, that would be one thing. But if I was trying to really passively say, like, hey, you need to back off, like, we're not looking for any trouble here, and someone was really, really pushing it, I would. Like, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I mean, I'm not out there, like, trying to flex the law to really, like, get people in trouble or be, like, vindictive about it. But if you're trying to mind your own business and you've made an honest mistake and you've been calm and said, like, hey, look, I made a mistake, like, can I just move on with my life? And they're, like, following you and then they assault you. Like, I don't know that I'm specifically... I don't know. I don't think that that's like some cowardice move to say, like, no, like, you don't just get to go punch people. Like, so, like,
yeah,
I had a situation where I dropped it on someone and they, like, tackled me, right? We talked about this on pod. Like,
at the point.
That's not a situation where, like, that's assault. Like, but if, like, if I was in the right about something and someone came up aggressively and I was trying to say, hey, give me my space, and they, like, came up and took a swing and punched
me. If you're in the parking lot, perhaps, and they come and confront you.
I would potentially call the police.
Yeah, it just depends.
Yeah.
Kind of just depends.
I don't know.
Yeah, but that tackle in the moment.
That's silly. That's the equivalent of, like, if you're playing pickup basketball and someone fouls you really hard, you're not going to call 911. Like, that's crazy.
Right. Right. Yeah, I remember Ashton Goggins when David Lee or when Chaz Smith put him up against the wall.
He
called the police.
That's so funny.
Anyway, all right. So yeah, you know, and Jed Smith said you apologize. If you did some violation, you busted someone's board, whatever. Mm-hmm. You dropped in. You know, you overestimated your abilities. Maybe like what I did when I dropped in the dude. You know, apologize profusely. Have some shame. Feel that shame. You're the epitome of a kook. You are everything that's wrong with surfing. Apologize profusely and beg for forgiveness. Ask what you can do to fix the situation. Rattle yourself in a way that is commensurate to the rattling you've caused. Too much of a coward? Paddle in and don't come back for a month. Maybe ever. And I had not come back to that spot for about a month, too. Not because of that guy, but...
That's an interesting perspective, and I don't think that that's wrong.
I don't either.
I mean, there's... Because in living through those experiences, you will learn to minimize the number of times that occurs.
But assuredly,
those occurrences sour the sport for you in those moments, for sure. And our goal should be to not have those types of experiences.
How about this? And I moved to Santa Cruz approximately 12 years ago.
Yep.
Just because you live there doesn't make you a local. And as this town gets more and more gentrified by Silicon Valley, by sprinters, by Hayden shapes, by really nice longboards, which I am guilty of purchasing and enjoying, but not surfing, giving them the just due. I don't know. Would you call yourself a local?
There are different ways to look at what localism is.
Yeah.
So stereotypically, the local is the broed out.
Yeah.
You know, when you're not surfing, you're pounding nails into houses, like you're roofing, you're plus or minus doing drugs on the side, screaming at everyone, sending it with the boys, I own this place.
Yeah.
You know, there's that, and we all see that. It's the dude standing at the top of the hook looking out at every wave that belongs to him. Mm. Everyone else is so lucky that he has decided to not paddle out on this day.
Indeed.
And there's that. And then there's Ben, the dude that lives in San Jose that surfs Pleasure Point like every day. Mm. And he paddles way out deep on his 12-foot glider and picks off a wave once in a while and never says anything negative to anyone. And I'm sure that those original locals are not cheering for him when he catches a wave. Doesn't live in Santa Cruz, but he puts in the time and he pays respect to the people there.
So he's definitely more local to that spot than I certainly am.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But I consider myself to be local.
Kids go to local schools, you pay goddamn property taxes.
You can look at it in that way. And
you take piano lessons locally.
Yeah, right. So what I would say about the idea of being local for me is that, like, you know, I've been surfing in Santa Cruz for 17, 18 years. Mm. I haven't surfed in the last 4 months.
Right.
But, like, I pay my respect to the rules for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, I make mistakes like every other. I know how to surf. I make good attempts to get out of the way.
Yeah, you do. You're conscientious. I've surfed with you many times.
But
if you're a douchebag out there, I wouldn't want to surf with you.
But by no means am I saying, I don't have any sense of entitlement whatsoever. Yeah. But I've been doing it long enough that, like, even if an entitled person that would be considered to be a local were to say some shit to me, I would definitely feel internally like, no, like, I've put in my dues in this area over the years. Like, even if you're a better surfer than me, like, I don't really care what you have to say, and you're not going to grouse me. Like, that's not going to happen today. Like,
I like this one, though. Your money and your status are worthless here. You've killed it. You made a heap of money. You got the mint car, the cool job, the hot spouse, the big house on the beach, and the fresh new Firewire. By the metrics of capitalism, you're hashtag winning. In the confines of surf culture, however, you are worthless. Health is wealth, and good cutbacks are currency in this world. The emaciated guy with malaria ripping cones out of an old Gatorade bottle in the beat-up Camry next to you is a king in this realm. Bow at his feet and beg for approval.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I would say the higher performance surf location that you go to, the more this rings true. Mm. So, like, this will not hold at Capitola, at the Village, but you better believe at the Lane that is the law,
right,
for sure. Or at 4 Mile or something like that, that's the law. The harder you rip, the more, this guy Dwayne that surfs out at 4 Mile, it's like clearly unhinged. And he's not even like the best surfer, but he's so loud and confrontational that you just want to give him his space.
You
don't want to mix it up with him. He's unstable. He's aggressive.
Juice ain't worth the squeeze.
For sure. For sure. And so in some ways, like, yeah, he's locally flexed his way into being the kingpin of that spot.
Right.
But at the Village, like, I don't think any, like, hot dogger comes through the Village and starts ripping it up. And everyone suddenly steps back like, whoa, like, this guy can really go. Give him all the room.
There are some good surfers that you defer to, like good longboarders out there I could think of.
But those guys are also guys that are putting in the time, and they're not being rude to
And they're
everyone.
Cool as shit.
If someone showed up where cutbacks are currency and spray is whatever, like, if they're an unknown person that rips and they show up to the Village, like, Sharon don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care.
I don't
Do
care.
You care?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
None of those guys are going to be like, oh, hey, give this guy his room. He really knows. It's like, no, like, they are the locals. They put in the time. There's an aloha vibe there that exists, that it's protected. They could go find better waves elsewhere. But it's, you know, I think that to some degree it is dictated by the spot you go to. But I understand what he's saying. And, like, that's something that should be universally understood, that class system exists.
This one hurt my feelings the most, and it probably hurts because, God, I know it's true. Style is very important. You consistently make your takeoffs. Check. Well, I'd say 3 out of 4 times.
Sure.
You can maneuver yourself into position at your local point break or rip bowl and change direction over the course of some pretty long rides. All right, I'd say 1 out of 2 times. You are surfing, technically, but you are hideous. You are an eyesore. You are aggravating to watch. Mickey Dora just swore so loudly it sent birds scattering from his gravestone. Jerry Lopez just had a back spasm mid-downward dog. A quick poll of the Stab office confirms it. No one has ever seen a stylish adult learner. Make of that what you will. You want to dispute it? Go on, get someone to film you. We dare you.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I don't think that you're as bad as you think that you are.
Well,
I don't think that people watch you surf and they think, like, oh my gosh, this is an abomination.
I don't think
anyone's going to watch your highlight reel.
No. Nope.
But no one's watching my highlight reel either.
There's a good saying, it's never as good as you think and it's never as bad as you think.
Sure.
Like, that's a good, like, baseball adage to keep an even keel, or in any sport.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
that one just hurt. There's a little, there's just a sense of like vitriol toward the adult learner in this article.
Sure.
Which I actually like appreciate. That's the thing. Like, I don't want to cape for the adult learner. Like, I wish I am an adult learner, but I wish there were no more adult learners out there. Like, now I'm fucking like selfish about this sport too. Right. Like, because I see, you know, people who are lesser ability than me or know less or are more douchey about things.
Sure.
Or passive aggressive or just fucking just annoying to surf with. And many of them are the adult learner, you know? But there's a sense of just the tone of this rubbed me the wrong way. As I read it now aloud and review it, it's not as abrasive as it was when I first... But, you know, style is very important. And what this guy said, and it's a picture of Steph Gilmore. And she's awesome.
Style queen.
Style queen. And he's right. Maybe that's
why it's funny because he's right for sure. There are like unequivocal truths in that article, but they don't all feel good.
No, they don't. Maybe that's why it doesn't feel good, right?
Yeah.
And then lastly, he closes out with, it's over. You shouldn't be out here if it's overhead and barreling and you can't make a wave. You probably know this without even attempting to put yourself in the spot. Something in your bones will tell you you're not cut out for this. You'll feel the fear. You feel slow, out of your depth. This is an intensity to the ocean that's foreign and menacing. There are dangerous conditions reserved for people who live for that shit. All right, blah, blah. I don't want to just straight up plagiarize this whole thing, but
I've had a couple of those days.
I was going to ask you. Go ahead. Name one.
Two of them stand out. The first one, I would say, my brother John Dickey and I, we went and surfed 4 Mile one day, and we were shoulder hopping off the side. And the tide started dropping as the swell was coming in, and it started barreling off the reef, like big barrels off the reef. And we saw it as it started to happen, and all the shortboarders just moved over into the slot, and it was just like they were stroking in, and they were stalling back and waiting for it to set up.
Damn.
And they were getting full shacked. And we both looked at each other and said, we are not skilled enough to catch these waves.
Yep.
I am not skilled enough to sit deep enough where I even have a chance to make one of these waves.
Yeah.
And these same four guys are going to do laps around me.
Yep.
Because they will sit deeper than me every single time. And there's not a damn thing I can do about it. And I remember we both felt this way and we verbalized it. And we said, we're going to stand the shoulder and we're going to enjoy the show. My level of skill is not enough to compete for waves in this environment. And I would botch every single one anyway.
So had you paddled out there... It was something I picked up down in Mexico, and it was annoying. There was a group of people that were saying, moving the peak. They go deeper and deeper.
Sure.
Before you know it, no one's making it because you're taking off in the wrong spot now.
Yeah.
And you would have forced those shortboarders to, well, they probably would have just stayed right there and just dropped in on you and kept going.
Sure.
But like for a conscientious person like me, like I drift along where the peak's going. So if someone keeps going inside, then you want to be,
then you
move to their spot when they go, and you end up going too deep and no one's making the wave now, right? So that was a nice move on your end. But you know it when you see it.
Well, yeah, it was very clear that like the level of skill needed to ride in that situation, I didn't have it.
Yeah.
The other situation that stands out is I caught a run of swell at Steamer Lane. This is a few years ago. And I was on a board smaller on that duster. It's like a 6'8" yellow full-bodied board. Just a smaller board than I've been riding, and I've since moved to a lot bigger surf craft. But it was a good run of swell coming through, and I had had two like decent days of surfing in a row out there, and I had been watching them all in the slot catching these waves, and I thought to myself, like, I want a piece of that.
Yeah.
But I'm not skilled or aggressive enough to go shoulder up the same local crew there.
No.
Like, the same locals that we just read about were Cutbacks or Currency. Those guys were just ripping.
Yeah.
They were all better surfers than me on smaller boards. And I thought to myself, I want a piece of that. But I'm intimidated to mix it up with these guys that all will surf way better than me. And you're right on the cliff where people are looking over and there's big swell and you're on full display. And assuredly, I'm going to kook it up.
Yeah.
And it will feel bad. And so I woke up at like 4:30 in the morning and I thought, I'm going to get there before anyone gets there. And there will be a window where it will be just me. I will get there so early, I will be the first in the water.
Right.
And I will have a crack at it before anyone is observing. I don't have to compete for any waves. I hopped off the rock and into the water. It was still dark outside. The first light hadn't even happened yet. And you're like kind of looking at the reflection of the moon or the stars, trying to see when waves are coming in. You can sit wherever you want. You can sit in the deepest part of the slot or way off the shoulder where it should be safe to get into it. And like 45 minutes went by and I couldn't get into a single wave because I wasn't skilled enough. I couldn't paddle in fast enough or hard enough.
You're missing it?
I was missing
it. Or was it pitching you or all that?
Both. Like, yeah. You know, it was moving so powerful and so fast that I could not generate the speed needed to get into the wave. And so then I would think, well, I need to sit deeper and I need the wave to pick me up. But it was too intimidating to sit deep enough because it was so powerful and slabby in that spot off the out of the bowl. I just couldn't do it. Mm. And the couple times I did generate enough speed to get up, I got pitched hard. And I was just in over my head. And I realized, I was like, you know, I guess I could keep trying this super early in the morning and maybe I'd pick one off. But like, I'm in too deep. Like, this is just not for me. Like,
you can go to another spot where you can...
this style with this pitch. And I'm just, I'm not talented enough to make this happen.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a bitter realization. Yeah. But, you know, now that I'm a little older and a little more wise, I don't care.
Like, that's a good...
it wasn't fun for me. And I felt like the pursuit of making it happen also wasn't fun. And now I ride slightly bigger boards with easier entries and I can ride bigger waves than what we're coming through that day. It's just a different style.
That's a good surf story.
Yeah.
I like that. Let's end it there. We talked NBA.
Ooh, yeah, we did.
We talked piano.
Covered all my bases.
I think we talked enough surf to satiate a surf.
I hope so.
A surf listener.
I hope so.
So... you still got that beautiful nose rider that was glassed incorrectly. And
the
Purple People Eater.
Yeah.
That's such a beautiful board.
I got to surf that board.
Let's go surfing sometime. Maybe this weekend. Let's go longboarding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's connect.
Or go up to the beach or something. Fuck off.
Sounds good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'd like to get you back out in the water, young man.
I would love to get back out on the water. It's just a matter of doing it. You know, I need someone to drag me on out there and then I'll days in a row.
All right. Will you record some piano and send it to me today?
Sure.
Or tomorrow?
Sure.
All right, cool.
Got a lesson today, 11 o'clock.
All right. Beautiful. Do you have anything to say to listeners before we go?
Be kind to one another.
Be kind to one another. Be kind to one another.
Midlife Surfer Podcast Listener. Small Wave Lover.
Small Wave Lover.
Craigslist Scroller.
Craigslist Scroller.
Nicaragua.
Stoke City, bitch.
Stoke City, bitch.